Chris Sankey says it's time for NGOs to butt out of First Nations business. What they are doing, he says, is tantamount to environmental colonialism. Sankey wants outsiders to stay in their lane and stop pretending to speak for First Nations. He says NGOs show up to run a campaign where it suits their interests, and once they have thwarted a resource development, they leave. And when they leave that First Nation doomed to further poverty. Sankey says First Nations now have a place at the table and on the balance sheet of resource development. That place in Canadian history was not available to First Nations until landmark court cases recognized the inherent right to consult and participate in development on traditional lands. Resource development for many First Nations provides access to economic opportunities that create jobs and support community infrastructure. These are the building blocks of an improvement in quality of life and self-actualization. Sankey says now along come these NGOs who have an agenda that in essence tells us to forego these opportunities and destine ourselves to continued poverty. He says, I'd like them to stay out of our business. We invited Chris Sankey to join us for a conversation that matters about why it's time for First Nations to speak up and tell others to butt out.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Chris Sankey, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm keen to get your perspective on where we're at in our relations between First Nations and the rest of Canada. You may recall that a few years ago, Perry Bellegarde, the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, was a guest on Conversations, and I asked him that same question. His answer was not good. He said, when you look at the Quality of Life Index, according to the United Nations, off reserve in Canada, the standard of living was sixth in the world. On reserve, it was 63rd. He said 6 versus 63rd. The gap is enormous. From your perspective, has anything changed? Is life on reserves in Canada improving? And if not, what is the path forward that will allow us to close this gap?
That's a good question. I don't think we're at where, we're not where we need to be right now.
No.
We're still generations away from being a part of Canada and not being apart from Canada. I think Mr. Bellegarde is right. I left the community because I wanted opportunity for myself, and in return, if I was to have a family, which I now do, I wanted an opportunity for my family and the condition and the unfortunate situations that the communities are in. They just don't have the revenues or the opportunity in the community. And so I left and I moved to Prince Rupert and I moved away for a while, got different experiences. But the gap between Indigenous people and mainstream Canada is still decades away from really being inclusive. Now, obviously, reconciliation is front and center of everything that's being done. And I think it's a good thing. But what I find frustrating is that we are here now, the greatest opportunity I've ever seen Indigenous people be in, to be, I feel like we're landlocked with these environmental groups. I feel that there's an opportunity now to move forward more than ever before.
Okay, let's define that opportunity.
Economic development.
Resource development?
Yeah, resource development, through sustainable development, the energy sector, transportation, whether it's sea, land, or rail, oil, gas, hydrogen, all these initiatives that are coming up. People get me wrong. I am for green initiatives. Mm-hmm. I just don't believe we're there yet to see that we could power up the national grid with wind turbines and solar. The source has got to come from somewhere. And further to that, BC Hydro's got to play ball in order for that to make sense. I think it's between 40 and 50 gigawatts in order to make it to make a go of it. But here we are now. We're upset about the fact that we're still decades apart yet from where we need to be as Indigenous people in Canada. That being said, never before has there ever been an opportunity where we are now in the driver's seat for economic development. And I feel that now that we're there, there are these groups, interest groups, that are trying to control the narrative and dictate what happens in specific parts of Canada. You know, they want specific areas to be designated for resource development. They want specific areas designated for green initiatives. They block wherever they feel they is going to be a hindrance. But I'm frustrated with that because they say this is about the environment, and it's not. How is it that over the last 10 to 12 years, Canada has only grown by 1% in the oil and gas industry? When you look at Russia, China, United States, they grew by 51%. So how could you tell me, if we're all about climate change, we're all about reducing our carbon footprint, yet we're allowing this to happen south of the border in all these other countries, and yet we are a rich resource country? That makes no sense to me.
So what do you think's happening?
I think
why are we in this situation?
Well, I think with the big push with WWF, Tides USA, I know when I was elected, there were serious concerns with regards to Tides Canada, but that was clarified. It was a lot of the money was coming from Tides in the United States. It was funding these specific organizations in Canada, and their sole objective was to stifle Canada's energy sector, and that's wrong.
But they would say that they are speaking on behalf of the environment and that their values are in line with First Nations communities, and in particular the bands that they have aligned themselves with. That they actually say, no, we're in harmony. But you say that isn't the case.
No. First of all, one, they don't speak for the Indigenous communities. They don't speak for the leaders. They don't speak for our people, us. That is not the case. If you take a look at Trans Mountain and Kinder Morgan, every single community signed up to those projects, with the exception of Kinder Morgan. I believe they're still working some details with some of the coastals, if not one or two, here in the Vancouver area. I believe with Salish,
yes,
Squamish, right?
Tsleil-Waututh. Yeah.
So look, that's none of my business, but somehow these environmental groups made it their business. But there's a catch here. There's a catch 22. We recognize now there's a problem in Canada. Everybody knows we need to address it. Mainstream media doesn't go near for some reason. I don't know why they're not tackling this thing, because that's the number one cause right now. Nothing being moved. Yet here we are with an opportunity to move forward, and it's the individuals are Indigenous. Some of our Indigenous people have to take some responsibility and tell these individuals to go away. Leave our challenges and our issues to our own. We're the only people in this country that's going to solve our differences. We have to sit across like this. We have to sit down and talk to one another. We can't have a third party intervening in these discussions. In our culture, like, we're not allowed to speak into other people's tribe. It's just a rule, a law in our culture.
So based on that, are you saying that environmental groups are not allowed to speak into your culture either?
No.
Like, because they're from outside of it.
Yeah, no. Like, if I did that, like, I'm Gispit Watergiatwagiots, if I spoke into, say, the Eagle House or anyone, it's a no-no. I'll get slapped in there, so you can't do that. That's up for them to discuss their differences and solve those and to move forward. So when I see this, it's extremely infuriating, because as a people, we keep saying we're about our hereditary status, we're about our culture, but we're allowing these environmental groups to dictate the direction of these conversations to an outcome that they want, not what we want. They're telling Canada that's what we want. That's not true whatsoever. Mm-hmm. We want to see responsible resource development that is to our environmental standards, that it's to our liking, and we're going to have those conversations.
So, in some of your online postings, which I find fascinating, you don't hold back. You don't pull any punches. You basically equate the actions and words of NGOs as a form of hijacking. You make the point of calling their actions colonialism, saying that what they're doing is at the expense of First Nations' long-term interests. From your perspective, what are the long-term consequences to those First Nations whose needs are being usurped by NGOs?
You've taken our voice. I mean, how could you say that you're there for Indigenous people when you're latching on to a small faction of people and portray that you're speaking for all of us when the majority of us are telling Canada, the media, the government, that is absolutely not true. That is not what's happening. I could tell. I would never speak for any of our Indigenous leaders. I would never make a call on that. But I can tell you right now, not one of those leaders would agree to anybody speaking for them, let alone the environmentalists. Mm-hmm. It's stealing our voices. It's taking away our opportunity to really hear the grassroots people.
So when an NGO is successful at halting resource development and the organization then moves on, we can argue that the environment is a benefactor, but who's paying the price for that?
Our people.
And what does that price look like? What is the cost?
No jobs, loss of jobs, loss of opportunity, loss of contracting opportunity, the revenues that can come to help with poverty, to help with infrastructure, to help with healthcare, to help with education, to help our elders. They're taking that away from us. And they're trying to claim they're there to help us.
So I think one of the things that is very important for anyone who's never been to an impoverished First Nation is to know that until you have been there, you have no idea what life is like for the people who live there. It's easy to look to Osoyoos and say, well, look, the Osoyoos Indian Band is doing great. Just follow their example, as if it's that easy. And yes, Chief Clarence Louie and Council have done a great job of bringing economic activity into the area. And that increase in activity has led to the creation of jobs, all of which provides funding for social programs and community infrastructure. The reality for the Osoyoos is that when opportunities finally became available, the band was allowed to pursue them. No one was telling them they shouldn't invite wineries or prisons into the area.
Look, it's hard. I don't like to compare communities with other communities because there are some
Fair
communities
enough.
That are situated in an ideal spot. There are some, though.
That's right. So Osoyoos has been lucky by geography.
Yeah.
However, go to First Nations that are off of Highway 16 that up until now had limited or no access to economic opportunity. For some, the unemployment rate is 65% and the quality of life is horrific, and that's an understatement.
Those communities were moved to these remote communities, you know, by the government back in the day, and therefore have left with nothing.
Right.
So when you have projects, you know, such as LNG Canada, CGL, or Kinder Morgan, and there's an opportunity to bring those communities along, to share revenue with them because they don't have those opportunities that you speak of, that's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But you have these environmental groups blocking that. Now, for us, where I'm from, like we've been blessed. We're right on the coast. We're access to the Asian market. We got the port-related developments. We got the grain. We got the terminal. We got LNG. We are looking at all these other things that are there, energy.
Well, you have those now, but for the longest time, they were literally not possible due to the Indian Act and the impact of colonialism.
Yeah, we didn't have them for a long time, but we said, if I remember, our leader said, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. These companies are going to pay an entry fee. I thought that was the right thing to do.
Right.
You want to come in and develop in our territory? Okay, it's going to cost you. Whereas before in the past, they just came in and that was that. We didn't get no benefit. We didn't have a seat and a say. There was all these things though. But now it's changed. Now it's all Indigenous-led opportunities. And again, I go back to when you look at these activist groups and these environmental groups, they're trying to intervene. Like, for example, where I was from, so many of them with the PNW project, they try to intervene in the Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency process. They wanted to have a say in this stuff, and they can't. That's not up to them.
You don't believe they should have intervener status?
Yeah. Absolutely none. Yeah. Zero. I mean, I wouldn't go into their household and tell them how to run their house. That's what they're trying to do to us. But yet they're going to argue, says, well, it's going to impact us up here too. You think we don't know that? If that's the case, which it is the case, we're going to talk to the nations up there and say, hey, we know this is impacting you as well. Mm-hmm. How do we work together? But one of the things I will not tolerate is hypocrisy. I'm not going to tolerate that. You can't say one thing and do another. You can't say one thing and just cater to a small group of individuals. You can't do that. If we do this, we do this together, and we do it as a collective voice. But don't say one thing and do another, because actions speak louder than words. These activists do not speak for me, my family. I know they don't speak for the community, and they don't speak for the leaders. And they need to stop.
Well, they're pretty good at getting media attention and giving the sense that they actually do speak for other communities. So good, in fact, that voices such as yours are being drowned out, which, as I understand, is causing you considerable frustration.
It is. Like, if you take a look, Aaron Gunn just did an episode, you know, and he actually spoke to the community people, that the grassroots people, that both the elected and those that are working. They're fed up. They're fed up. It's time to move on. And I think our leaders need to start realizing, which I believe they are. I think the leaders I've spoken to, you know, is enough's enough. We can't continue like this. This is not only hurting our people and our communities, we're hurting the province, we're hurting the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just us that are suffering, it's non-Indigenous people in this country that are also paying the piper. People, you know, I get the fact that we want to protect the water, we want to protect our air, we want to protect the land, I get all of that. But never before in the history of Canada, we could actually dictate and say how we want this done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even though I'm pro-resource development, I have a vested interest in this.
You don't hide that fact at all.
And I got nothing to hide. I'm an open book. You ask me anything, I will answer you. Like, I own a heavy civil company with other partners. I'm involved in energy itself, moving bitumen. I have a firm that does Indigenous engagement, stakeholder relations, and government affairs. I don't hide nothing. I don't need to hide beyond this. I love what I do. You know, I love what I do, Stuart, because I want to make a difference. And the one thing I said to myself, if I'm not helping create jobs, I'm not doing my job.
So given the history between First Nations and governments in Canada, along with where we are at right now, does the intervention of outside groups who purport to speak for you, does that add to your level of frustration?
Oh, it's beyond frustrating. And now what's happened is, and our people got to take responsibility for this too. They start talking hereditary, which I don't disagree with.
Right.
I believe hereditary system has to play a role in what we're trying to do. I was viewed our hereditary like a Senate, that, you know, that they're another governing body, so that when elected body gets together, they talk about these issues or opportunities, they could run this say by the Senate of things they want to look at passing. I think there's a real play for them here.
Mm-hmm.
But to watch the activists and the environmental groups try to make that call for us, it's unacceptable. I'm not going to tolerate it, and I'm not afraid to go against anybody that wants to debate this issue, because the stuff that I'd seen from these activists, the things that they wanted, wasn't about protecting the environment. It was about getting their pound of flesh. And Canada needs to hear that. They need to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, I don't wake up in the morning and say, you know what? How do I destroy the earth today? Come on.
Right.
That's just absurd.
Okay, so Chris, I can imagine as a person who's been excluded, forced to live outside of the system with few to no rights, constantly on the receiving end of unjust treatment, I'm going to say, the system screwed me and my people in the past. Why should I trust you now? Is that a legitimate point of view based on history?
Yeah, I think there are people that are concerned, but what happens though with these concerns is these groups take advantage of those concerns. Because it's a group of people that, even though they don't trust industry or they're very worried about what could happen to their territories, it's a smaller group versus the larger population that is for resource development. So I say my answer to that is yes, if there's no trust, then it's the leaders and the people that need to sit down with industry and hash that out, mm-hmm. not the environmental groups. They're not, right? And they're well-funded. They're well-oiled group of people and very well. They have executed this whole thing unbelievably well. I mean, when you look at what they've done.
You almost have an admiration for how well it's been rolled out.
You know what? If we had executed something like that on our end with regards to opportunities like that, I guarantee there'll be not a starving child in our communities anymore.
And then the benefit is to all, to everyone in each of these communities, to the region, the province, to the country as a whole. This is what happens when economic opportunity is accessible. Everyone then has opportunity to realize their full potential. And when that happens, we see remarkable changes.
Absolutely. You know, I look at guys that have led a lot of this environmental activism, you know, guys like Gerald Butts and all these guys that are up there, and they're so well connected
mm-hmm.
In this country when it comes to media and these campaigns and this against the tar sand stuff that has happened over the last 10 to 15 years. It was very well played.
Yeah, and they even call it the tar sands. And to demonstrate how effective their campaigns have been, you just repeated their definition of the oil sands.
But it's a term, but then people run with that.
Yes.
Right? They don't understand all the reclamation that's going on up there. I went to go visit a community up there and just sat down and listened to them, what they were doing. Mm. You would be unbelievably surprised of the trials and tribulations they've had to go through to get to where they are today, mm-hmm. around cumulative effects, combating climate change, all those things they're doing.
Yes.
They're reclaiming their lands. They're doing all these wonderful things. You would hear that, you think you'll hear that in the media? No, not at all. Just like them, just like us, they too had concerns with regards to the environment. So they took control and made sure that those lands are going to get back to the way they are.
Well, you take a look at many of those First Nations that are up in around Fort McMurray. They've done incredibly well, and they have been active partners and participants in that development.
Yeah.
You're right. You don't hear that.
Yeah.
You don't hear how well they're doing.
No, you don't.
The jobs that have been created.
You don't, and it's frustrating because I know a lot of people up there, and they're not about destroying the environment. I mean, they're indigenous, like us. We care about our earth. They wouldn't do this deliberately to hurt their own lands. It's just crazy that somehow this big push that there are some indigenous people that are pro-development, or they don't care about their culture. Well, you don't care about your land. That's ludicrous. I mean, every day I wake up, I don't want to wake up and leave something for my children that's a disaster. Mm-hmm. That's just crazy. I think with today's new and innovation technology, the way things are now built with regards to pipelines and the moving of product has changed drastically. Yep. And look, industry was never this good in terms of its engagement. Let's be honest here. Industry wasn't always the best person in the room.
No.
Okay? And they knew that. And it takes time to develop a relationship with industry. Now, sometimes I may sound polarizing when I talk about energy because I'm pro-development, but what people don't hear me say is when I talk to the groups I work with, well, you know what? I don't recommend you do that because that's an absolutely not a terrible way. That's a terrible way to go if you're kind of trying to get something built.
Right.
You got to talk to our people.
Of course you
right?
do.
Right? And when you're in your meetings with your community, you always got to worry about Don't worry about it. You always got to pay attention to the auntie and the women in the back of the room because they're the backbones of our communities. They're the ones who go out and fundraise for our kids. They're the ones who put up bake sales. When there's a death or a celebration in the communities, they're the ones who go out and do all the hard work.
Right.
You know, we could raise money out of nothing to something. So when industry comes in, you have to pay attention to our people that are listening to you in the back. They may not say a lot of things, but man, when they want to be vocal, if they don't agree with something, man, you better watch out. If you didn't do it right.
That's a topic for another day. Fist bump here. Yes, okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thanks for coming in and doing this. Thank you.